Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to episode 6 of the UI Breakfast podcast, and I'm your host, Jane Portman. Today, our co-host is the marvelous Kai Davis, the marvelous and spectacular outreach consultant who has been teaching us about positioning and naming lately. But today, we are going to talk about his core expertise, which is outreach. Today, we are going to discuss the why, the strategy of cold outreach, how it can influence your business, whether you are a SaaS owner or a consultant, and why you absolutely must do that. So, Kai, how would you start a conversation about cold outreach?
I think the first question that comes to mind when we think about cold outreach is, why cold outreach? Like, how does cold outreach differ from what is cold outreach, and how does it differ from other marketing channels? That seemed like a good spot to jump in.
Absolutely. So we have inbound marketing where people come prepared, right? Mm-hmm. They are attracted by your content. With the cold outreach, it's a different picture.
So absolutely.
Paint it in all color.
So like you said, inbound marketing is when you create content, a blog post, an article, a video, a white paper, something super awesome and exciting, and people show up and read it and engage with it. And we don't know where they're coming from necessarily, but they love it. They're coming into our site. With outreach, it's much more focused on identifying your best potential buyers in the market, the 10% of people who would make amazing ideal customers, and then going out to them, starting that conversation and relationship with them, and educating them about the problems you're great at solving, the problems they're probably experiencing as a business or might be experiencing as a business if they're an ideal customer for you, and then the solution that you're able to offer. So the real fundamental distinction there is, with inbound marketing, you're creating the content and waiting for people to come to you. With outreach or cold email outreach or cold calling, you're creating content to educate people, but then you're going out and saying, hey, I've got this thing. It talks about problems you might be experiencing as a business owner. Are these the problems you're experiencing? Let's have a conversation and see if this matches up with the world you're experiencing.
And we have to mention that cold outreach is strongly associated with all bad things in the world. It just makes people, you know, freeze in their tracks and die right in the spot because they're afraid to overcome their poor ego and, you know, to go and offer themselves into the wild, into someone who has no idea who they are, as opposed to being an authority who attracts people, right?
Exactly.
So give us 3 core reasons why we must do cold outreach because of how it can win over inbound marketing.
So I think the 3 core reasons are, first, that there's more best buyers out there for your product, more ideal customers than could ever naturally find you by searching the right phrase on Google or getting referred to you by a friend. So by incorporating outreach marketing into your sales and marketing strategy, you're opening yourself up to a limitless number of potential customers for your business. The only criteria are the criteria you define. So if you say, hey, you know what? I have a SaaS, I'm selling a product, and my ideal customer owns a e-commerce store and they're doing $1 million in sales a year. Well, great. You're able to take those criteria, build a list of the people you want to reach, and then go out there and start having conversations with them. Maybe not everyone you talk to will want to work with you, but you're at least starting with a larger segment of people and saying, hey, great, can this help you improve your business? Let's have a conversation about that. The second reason it makes sense is it's a great combination with the inbound marketing strategies that a lot of businesses already are using. If you're creating educational content, white papers, articles, knowledge bases, videos, podcasting, whatever, if you're able to leverage that even more so by using outreach marketing, both to create these opportunities. Let's say you want to go on a podcast or do a joint venture with somebody. Well, the first step is to pick up the phone or open up that email and send something over to them to say, hey, you know what? It'd be great to work together. Here's what I could offer. Does this sound like it would provide value to your audience? So outreach marketing helps build opportunities that expose people to your content that you're already creating. And the third reason that I think it's really valuable for people is it pushes you into answering valuable questions about your business. I say that for any outreach marketing campaign, it starts with first having a very crystal clear understanding of who your ideal customer is. If you start off saying, you know, I have a product, but the customers are single mothers and students and surfers and business executives, well, that's not really a product. That's a list of different people who somehow are using something you've created. But if you start off saying, well, for my cold outreach campaign to be successful, I need to know exactly who I'm trying to reach, it forces you to answer that question of who your audience is, what the pains and problems your audience is experiencing are, and how you could best reach them and communicate with them. And by answering those questions, I think you build a better business, because now you know, well, I have a product and sure, it might work for all of these people, but we're just focusing in on business executives. And the best way to reach them is to talk about these pains and problems. And once you answer those questions, you have a better understanding of your market and you have a better understanding of how to sell to that market. So those are the three main reasons to use cold outreach. It helps you reach your best buyers. It helps you promote your content and build relationships. And it makes you answer key questions to your business that you might have skipped over, who your audience actually is, who you want to sell to, and what language to use to actually reach these people.
So this implies that founders are the best people to do cold outreach by themselves so that they can crystallize these things in their head first before outsourcing it, before hiring a sales consultant or whoever can do that for them.
Yes and no. I think that...
Oh, I'm sorry. I forgot I'm talking to someone who does just that. How could I?
I think you're hitting the nail on the head that the outreach process is valuable for a founder to do. And it's a great way to actually start having those conversations with people where you say, hey, do you have trouble getting traffic to your website? Yeah, I do. Okay, great. I've got something that will help. Are you willing to pay for it? And if the customer says no, well, suddenly you're going to get the actual objections and actual reasons that they aren't willing to pay for it. If they say yes, great. You've got a new customer. You've got a new client. I'd say that The situations where I'd say it's not valuable for a founder to be doing this is when the founder has more important things to focus on, or the founder is time constrained, or the founder is saying, I could invest my time in learning how to do this, or I could invest money into somebody who's already able to do this themselves. Similar to hiring any type of consultant, be it a copywriter, be it a designer, be it a conversion rate optimization expert. These are all skills that any founder could learn themselves. But it's that question of, well, would I rather invest my time into learning how to do this and making the mistakes, or would I rather invest my money into hiring somebody who's already made the mistakes and could help me get past them more quickly?
If we compare that to the different stages that, let's say, SaaS product goes through. Mm-hmm. So there is the initial stage when everything gets built, when you Safari things and when you define what to build. There is the process when you already have your first few customers and you're kind of trying to nail that product market fit and then scale through that. And there is, the mature stage of the process where the only thing that bothers you is just growing the numbers nice and steady. And what stage would you recommend for a SaaS founder to do things themselves? And maybe at the last stage, you can hire someone out?
That's a really, really good question. I think so depending on whether they want to do it themselves or hire out, I think it depends on what resource they have available to trade. So at any point, it might be more valuable for the founder to be doing it themselves, or it might be more valuable to bring a consultant in. I've worked with startups who say, we're trying to validate this idea. We need to communicate with potential customers. And I've worked with large established businesses who say, you know, this is going to be one of our core marketing channels. We need to bring in an expert to help us set everything up correctly and make sure we're approaching it strategically and intentionally. I don't know if there's necessarily a cutoff point where suddenly it makes more sense to do it yourself versus hiring out for it. It more depends on what your immediate goal is and whether you have the time available to do it yourself or want to do it yourself.
Yeah, because it is very time consuming, right?
Yep, it really is. What I found is that when it comes to cold outreach, people always assume that you spend most of your time sending the emails or most of the time on the phone with prospects But I think from hard-won lessons, I've learned that a majority of the time when it comes to cold outreach is really spent on the prospecting phase. So identifying different businesses that might be potential customers, qualifying them. Hey, dude, let's make a list of 5 criteria and they have to have at least 4 of them. Okay, let's go through this list of 100 businesses and see how many match up. Then finding the contact information for the executives or the founder or the president, then writing the outreach sequence of emails. And only once you've accomplished all of those are you able to get started sending emails and saying, great, is this something that would solve a problem you have? So there's a ton of work that's front-loaded in an effective cold outreach email campaign that does often get glossed over or people ignore. One example that I love sharing is when I'm working with a client on an outreach campaign, I want to write the first 10 emails we send to a customer before we even start building our prospecting list, because we need to plan for all the contingencies. When we send that first email, well, what if they don't respond back? What if they say no? What if they say, yes, I'd love to get on a call with you? By planning out your marketing materials, the emails you're sending ahead of time, it's so much easier to respond and engage and start the conversation with people since you already have that marketing material to draw on, instead of saying, oh, crap, they said no, I've got to write an email for that now.
Right. Now we have to nail one more question here. So outreach can be used as a sales channel and as a marketing channel. Mm-hmm. Personally, I do not quite make the difference between these two, because I think that marketing kind of organically grows into sales. Mm-hmm. But can you draw the line between these two for us?
Absolutely. I think, so first let me talk about the similarities between the two. Whether you're using outreach as a sales channel or a marketing channel, it all comes down to the act and the art of relationship building. When you're sending an email to somebody to either build a relationship with them to see if they want to buy your product or build a relationship with them for a marketing campaign, it's all relationship building at the heart of it. So the
manually
relationship building. So the heart of it is relationship building. The distinction is whether you're going after people to talk about the distinction is whether on the sales front, you're going after your ideal customer directly saying, I'm going to look forward and down and see who out there is a potential customer for my business, and then start a conversation with them and see if they want to buy. In terms of marketing, I think of it as looking sideways. Who else in this marketplace, who else in the industry I'm in has already built an audience similar to the people I want to reach? And how can I build a relationship with this person who has an audience and then use that relationship to gain exposure to this audience? So the distinction, I think, comes down to who you're targeting, whether it's the customers themselves or potential customers or authorities and influencers who have built up an audience of your potential customers.
Now it makes much better sense. So sales outreach is, you know, direct outreach with the sales, like directly selling product to people. Mm-hmm. And marketing outreach is building that network of professional relationships that allows you to reach wider markets with your content, not with your sales letters. So you're approaching like those influencers and friends and whoever can do things for you, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You absolutely nailed it.
Great. I thought there was a third type, like emailing people for interviews, but this is actually precisely the marketing type. Now I know.
Yep.
Thank you.
And so in my own services, it really does break down into those two camps. So I have mm-hmm. clients who I do the marketing type outreach for, where it's, hey, great, we want to get on podcasts or get guests for our podcast or get guest articles out there at popular sites that our ideal customers read. That's more the marketing outreach. It's still relationship building, but it's emailing an editor or emailing a podcast host and saying, hey, my client has, you know, these 3 topics he'd love to educate your audience about. Which one of these would your audience like to learn more about, and building that relationship and moving it forward? With sales outreach, it's the similar process, but it's much more focused on, well, let's draw up a list of the 100 dream companies we'd love to work with, and then start that outreach campaign to the executives or the founders or the presidents and say, hey, are you the right person to talk to about getting more traffic to your website or making more sales for your products, and building that conversation focused on educating them about the problem and then teaching them about the solution we offer to solve that problem. So relationship building, similar tactics in terms of outreach and sending emails, but the distinction is One is targeted directly at the customers we want to buy our thing. One is targeted at authorities who have built up an audience of those customers who we want to buy our thing.
Yeah. Do you have, whenever you are given a consulting gig, do you have a preference which you like to handle better?
It's a good question. I think there's value in each one, and it depends on what the client's goals are. I've had people come to me for the more marketing-focused outreach, and through conversations and understanding what outcomes they're searching for in their business and what results they're looking for, we've determined that, oh, a sales-focused outreach campaign might make more sense. So the distinction I draw is with marketing-focused outreach, it's much more like you're planting seeds in a garden to harvest later. You're building up an audience. You're building up a reputation. You're becoming an authority. If you're on 10 podcasts talking about how people could use retainers in your industry to make more money, suddenly people see you as a go-to person about that topic. They might not become a customer today or tomorrow, but they know who you are. They recognize your name, and eventually they'll buy. With sales-focused outreach, it's much more focused on, hey, you're a business who might benefit from this if you're experiencing this problem. Are you experiencing this problem? And from that conversation, you move much more directly towards the sale, and you're looking to plant and harvest today, not next year.
Right. For me personally, I think I'm more qualified to talk about marketing outreach because I've done plenty myself, as it turns out. Mm-hmm. And sales outreach seems to be completely terrifying. Can you shed us some light why it should not be terrifying?
I think people get afraid of it because it's much closer to asking for the sale. And when you're asking for the sale, when you're asking for somebody to pay you money, there's a much higher probability that they're going to reject you. And we as humans don't like rejection. It's painful. It hurts. It's scary.
Right.
It bruises our ego. But the truth is, unless you distance yourself, unless you build a strong ego, you're always going to have pain when you approach somebody for a sale and they say no. I think cold outreach is powerful because it helps you become better at that sales process and understand, well, sure, I might talk to 100 people and 95 of them will say no, but 5 of them will say yes. And so let's focus on the positive of the 5 people who say yes instead of the negative of the 95 who say no. Because if we had never contacted any of these people, it's as good as if they had said no to us. But by initiating the relationship and saying, hey, maybe this is a thing you'll enjoy, you're going to get a few yeses that you wouldn't have otherwise. So it feels scary because it puts us a little outside of our comfort zone. But I think it's when we're outside of our comfort zone
that
we learn the most.
That's the wrong word.
But so. The success rates differ drastically between the two. So with a marketing-focused outreach campaign, we might get a placement rate between 5 and 10%. With a few clients, I've gotten as high as 15%. So if we contact 100 blogs or 100 podcasts, we get 5, 10, or 15 people who say, yeah, I'd love to have you on, or yeah, I'd love to have you write a guest article. With sales-focused outreach, it might be somewhere between a 1 and a 3% conversion rate. And that's just a conversion rate from person we emailed to person who says, yeah, I'd love to have a sales call. So you're dealing with much different numbers there, but depending on your business, depending on where you think the best investment is, a sales-focused outreach campaign can be incredibly valuable as long as, echoing back a minute, you have a clear understanding of who your audience is, what value you could offer to them, and what problem you're solving for them.
That's great. That's great. So we've talked about the why. So once you decide that the cold outreach, let's say for sales, is the essential part of your process, what do you think about next?
I think the first step is to really dial in the audience you're trying to reach. You might have a business where you're selling to multiple audiences, and that's perfectly okay, but you'll have the most success in your outreach campaign if you choose a single audience to focus on first. So instead of saying, hey, we're going to target both founders and consultants with this outreach campaign, well, those are two different audiences who might use different language to refer to different problems. Even though you're good at solving both of those problems with your product, it's much better to say, we're just going to focus on founders with this outreach campaign. So we know the language is dialed in. We know we understand the problems they're facing, and we'll have a lot more success instead of diluting our marketing message across two people. So step one is really identify the audience you're trying to reach. Step two, really understand the problems that that audience is facing. Again, echoing back to our last episode.
Going to pains. Yeah.
Going to pains. It all comes back to pains. And the Brain Audit by Sean D'Souza, which I think we've recommended three times so far.
Well, let's go back to Brain Audit. The pain. First, you define the pain. Then you quickly define the solution, but then you go back to pain because the customer should not forget that he's in risk, right?
Exactly. And so I think it with a sales-focused outreach campaign, you want to follow a similar structure where you're emailing people to learn if they're experiencing the problem that you're great at solving. And then if they say, yeah, I am, or if they indicate consent to receiving more emails, then you start educating them further on, well, hey, this is the problem that you're experiencing, and this is my solution, and this is what you're losing out on by not investing in a solution or not fixing this problem in your sales funnel or not fixing your leaky website. So by understanding those, crispy pains that the people you're emailing, the people you're contacting are experiencing, then you're able to move on to the next step, which is actually writing the outreach email. So you figure out your audience, you figure out the pains that they're experiencing, and then you want to start figuring out what your actual outreach campaign looks like. So let's say we decide we want to send 10 emails to founders to talk to them about the UI audit book and see if they are the right market to buy it. So we create these different emails talking about the different problems, the different pains, almost like a sales letter format, and send it off to them. But by writing out the entire outreach sequence ahead of time, we avoid the problem of somebody responding back and asking a question and us not having an answer prepared. Or we send the first email and nobody responds, and then we're scrambling to say, oh, great, what do we say in the second email? By planning out the first 5 or 10 emails ahead of time, you completely avoid that problem. And you're able to say, okay, great, I know as soon as I start somebody on this outreach campaign, I have the first email I send them planned out, I have the second email, I have the third email, I have the fifth email, I have the 10th email. And you don't have to think about it day to day anymore. You know, you're able to put prospects into the front end of this machine. They move through the outreach sequence. And at the end, you get a few people who say, hey, you know what? That sounds like exactly what I need for my business. Let's talk more.
Right, right. So we have that sequence. We identify the audience, which is extremely important. Then we nail the pain, which is even more important. And then we actually do the technical execution, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Could you give us like an idea, organizational idea, how an outreach campaign is structured in terms of, you know, manpower, you know, the flow? Now we see that should be a scenario of a few emails to refer to, mm-hmm. but anything else we should know about it?
I think that one of the most valuable assets that somebody could put in place when they're thinking about a cold outreach campaign is market data, and mm-hmm. really looking at their industry as a whole and looking at supporting market data that they could gather. So in the case of something like the UI audit book, it might be saying, well, did you know that here's a case study of a SaaS that improved conversions and improved trials, so improved revenue by 10% by following this checklist and building a better website. Are you making these same mistakes? So by gathering market data, we're able to support the outreach we're doing by pointing to third-party sources or case studies we've prepared that say, hey, you know what? This solution, it really does work, and here's evidence of it.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
And any sort of supporting data like that can be incredibly valuable. It doesn't even necessarily have to be case studies that you yourself have prepared. It could be case studies that you found out in the wild or read about in journals, and just being able to point to it as an authoritative source and say, you know, this is why focusing on the UI of your app really, really makes sense. Here's a case study. Here's an article. Here's a white paper. You don't have to have prepared any of those yourself, but just by being able to reference them, the recipient is able to say, oh, wow, this is a problem I need to think about. I better start investigating a solution to this pain.
Yes, I had had an experience with sales copy, and Nick has suggested that I start with a reference from Forbes magazine. That ignoring the importance of style and design is one of the silliest mistakes that smart people can do. This is totally generalist quotation. However, the Forbes name really gives it weight.
Absolutely.
So the psychological basics are that the people like facts, people like numbers, and what else do people like in their cold outreach emails?
The another element that I think people really value in cold outreach emails, or that helps successful cold outreach emails stand out from the rest of the pack, is personalization, or making it as tailored to the people you're contacting as possible. It's a fine line that you walk. As you start to approach scale on a campaign like this, where you're sending 50, 100, or 1,000 emails in a month, you run into the issue of, well, I can't customize and write a custom tailored email for every person, but there's tricks you could use to make it seem more personalized. So I'm sure we've all, dear listener, been on the receiving side of an email that's something like, "Dear webmaster, I'd love to help you improve your SEO for site name. Here's how I could help you do it. Here's my price. Please contact me." And we delete those emails because it doesn't feel human. It doesn't feel authentic. It doesn't feel like something somebody would actually send to another person. So by personalizing the emails, including the name of the person you're emailing, the name of the company, market data, anything that you're able to reference and sort of merge into your emails about the person you're contacting, you increase the chance of the email being successful. Hand in hand with that, and this is a contradiction from most email marketing advice, shorter emails work better than longer emails. So when it comes to marketing-focused emails, there's a truism that longer copy-focused emails convert better because you're telling a story, you're educating the visitor, or educating the subscriber, and you're teaching them. When it comes to sales emails, or sales cold outreach emails, you want to be focused on the pains and problems the person's experiencing, but you also want the email to be short. You don't want to send an email and have it be 15 paragraphs long and somebody on their iPhone scroll down 2 paragraphs and then click the delete button. You want it to be short with a clear call to action, at least to start off, so people could understand who this is for, what problem you're solving, and whether it will deliver value to them. And they might not respond to that email, but by having it be shorter, focused emails with clear calls to action, you increase the chance that people will be positive about the email, be receptive to the email, and respond to the email.
Right. So the task for today's episode was to discuss the strategy. However, I cannot wait to dive into the process. How the hell you do that?
Sure.
So why do not we just jump into that? I'm really eager to hear how you actually get started.
Absolutely. So what part should we start with?
So what do you do first? I think research is the hardest part for me because writing is more or less writing. Right. But the research is like, where do I start? How do I find these people, not companies? How do I find companies and then people? How does it work?
The generating the prospect list is one of the more time-intensive parts of it. How do I identify which companies I want to contact? But I found a couple tools that really help with it. One is, it's a higher price tool called BuiltWith. And let me just take a drink of water quickly.
Okay.
BuiltWith. It's around $300 a month, but it lets you search basically for websites that have specific signals to them. So you could say, I want a list of Shopify stores that are spending between $500 and $1,000 a month on additional third-party services and are also using, let's say, MailChimp for email marketing. And BuiltWith goes out and searches
its
database.
There is a service who does that.
That's what BuiltWith does. You're just able to enter the criteria and it's like, okay, great. Here's the list of 3,000 sites that matches criteria.
Amazing.
This
is magic.
It's a magic. Crazy tool. Another tool out there that does something similar is Nerdy Data. And Nerdy Data basically searches the HTML code on a website. So you could do something like say, well, I know my ideal customer is using Infusionsoft. And let's say I just wrote a book about how to optimize your Infusionsoft setup to make twice as much money. So I want to contact people using Infusionsoft. You could find the little HTML snippet that indicates they're using Infusionsoft, the embed code, and just say, hey, Nerdy Data, I want you to search the web like a Google search for sites that have this bit of code embedded on it. And it spits out a huge report for you of potential customers to outreach to. So those are two tools that I found are really valuable. The third one is actually LinkedIn. When it comes to identifying prospects or searching out a particular company, LinkedIn has been incredibly valuable in terms of just being able to search in a geographic region or for a particular type of business and then figure out, oh, hey, this is the CEO or this is the president and this is the founder. When it comes to outreach, I found starting at the top and then getting a referral down is infinitely more valuable than approaching the sales manager or the marketing manager directly because, sorry, I have a frog stuck in my throat.
Do not worry.
When you contact the CEO or somebody higher up on the organizational chart directly, you're more likely to get a referral down to, oh, hey, you shouldn't be talking to me about this. You should be talking about Jen or talking to Jen, our marketing manager. And suddenly you aren't random vendor or random person emailing Jen. The CEO has just referred you down. So
right.
you get that label. Exactly.
He just told me to, you know, talk to you.
Exactly. So when it comes to targeting the outreach, I found that using a tool like BuiltWith or Nerdy Data is great at identifying the companies. Then I want to go a level deeper and say, okay, I have a list of companies. Who's the founder? Who's the president? Who's the CEO? Who are the C-level executives? I might use a tool like LinkedIn to search out that data. From there, you have that question of, great, what are these people's email addresses? And that's often the hardest question to answer. I found a tool, Email Hunter. I think it's emailhunter.com. And it's a wonderfully valuable tool because it lets you enter a domain name and it will tell you all the email addresses it's found for that domain name. And it will also tell you its best guess at the format of an email address. So some companies might use first name, last name at companyname.com. Some might use first name at companyname.com. Some might use first initial, last name at companyname.com. I've had email addresses at Kai at company name, K Davis, Kai D, everything under the sun. But the great thing about Email Hunter is it will tell you what its best guess is for that email address format. So if you know the company, if you know the name of the person you're trying to contact, Email Hunter, even if it isn't able to find the exact email address for you, will give you that insight of, okay, the format is probably first name, last name at companyname.com. And if you know the person's first name and last name, now you know their email address. So at this point, we've started off with a list of companies. We've identified the people we want to contact at the companies. And then we found the email addresses of the people. That's the prospecting list we want to start outreaching to.
Right. I want to actualize one thing. The way you use BuiltWith and Nerdy Data is that criteria that we seldom use when we qualify the audience. Because when we're trying to build a persona for the product, persona for the campaign, we're saying like housewife, 30 years old, and, you know, kids and, you know, inspired by art. But what you want to have is, let's say, housewife who is using Pinterest actively, who has, let's say, profile on Twitter actively or something like that. Very objective criteria, which very often comes with, you know, the technological labels with the software that they are using, because that can tell a lot about people.
Absolutely.
This is a very objective criteria. You know, people being kind or people being, you know, sophisticated, generous or glamorous or whatever, you cannot Google that, but you can Google what they're using and you can find their profiles and you can use these tools to do that.
Absolutely.
It's extremely important.
And especially if you're doing business-to-business outreach, then you're able to say, well, my ideal customer is on this platform or using this technology or using this app. And if you're able to build a list of companies that match that criteria, then it's so much easier to say, okay, great. My product helps people who are using Infusionsoft. Let's get a list of people who are using Infusionsoft. That becomes the core of your outreach campaign.
Precisely. Plus, when we're positioning the product, we are often niching down, like, in between, let's say, a very cheap alternative and a very expensive alternative, or you are trying to be like this but more expensive, or this but for but lightweight, right, or something like that. Let's say Drip is a perfect example how they nailed the niche between Infusion Software and MailChimp. This is like our exercise book example. So you have very direct relevance to those pieces of software there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so, like, let's pick on Drip for a second. If Drip was using an outreach campaign like this, they might say, well, it's going to be hard for us to convince somebody who's on a free MailChimp plan to start paying $50 a month, but it's going to be pretty easy to convince somebody who's paying $500 a month for Infusionsoft to pay us $200 a month if we're able to show them that the features are the same. So Drip might use an outreach campaign like this to say, well, we're going to target people who are using Infusionsoft. Or they might go even one step deeper and say, we want to target a specific niche or a specific vertical that's using Infusionsoft. So let's just go after food bloggers first. Because again, with the audience example, if we target a particular audience like food bloggers, we're able to customize our messaging, customize the problem we talk about, customize the actual words we use in our email to reflect that audience. Where if we're targeting fitness bloggers or B2B software companies, we describe what we do and the problems we solve and the pains they experience in slightly different ways. So by understanding that audience you target first, everything else flows from that.
That's great. So we defined the audience. We found the people who we're going to be writing to. And how do we actually write for them? How do we send those emails?
I found that there's two different ways to really approach that. The first way is to do it manually yourself through a mail merge solution like Yesware, if you use Gmail, or a CRM like Salesforce or Sugar. So these are tools that let you say, hey, here's a template, but I'm going to put a couple of variables in here. So it'll automatically replace first name with the person's actual first name, or company name with the company's actual name. Tools like that are great and very affordable, but it still relies on you actively following up, remembering, oh, I haven't heard back from Jim yet. I have to send him email number 3. I haven't heard back from Susan yet. I need to send her email number 6. I've started using a tool called Quickmail, and there's a number of tools like this out there, but Quickmail is great at automating the prospecting email sequence, the emails we're actually sending to these people. So with Quickmail, I take the 7 or 10 emails I've written and I load them in and I say, hey, Quickmail, after you send email number 1, wait 5 days. And if you haven't heard back from the person, send email number 2. And then wait 3 days. And if you haven't heard back, send email number 3. And so I'm able to set up the sequence and the time frame, set up A/B testing between different emails if I want. I just have that entire sequence in there. And then once I have that sequence loaded in, I could just import an Excel list of the people I want to contact with their first name, their last name, their company name, and their email address. And Quickmail takes that, merges it into the email templates, and just starts sending on my behalf. As soon as somebody responds, Quickmail says, okay, great, they've responded. I'm not going to send them another email. It's your job now, Kai. But it really automates away the pain of, oh, I have to remember to send this follow-up email to somebody. So as soon as I switched my outreach from the old method, doing it all myself, I did that for close to a year and a half, to this new method, the response rates increased because it no longer was my job to remember to send the emails. I was able to delegate that to a piece of software.
Great. So when you're automating that, you're inputting people's, let's say, names and email addresses, but do you go further in customization when you do research? Are you actually populating emails with some personal phrases and things that are highly customizable?
In some cases, I am. In some cases, I'm not. It seems to come down to, again, an issue of scale. With some tools, you are able to set, like one tool I use that's more public relations focused is called BuzzStream. It's a outreach software for public relations professionals. And you're able to define a ton of custom fields in BuzzStream. So you could say, you're able to say, hey, here's a custom phrase I want to include or reference to an article and merge that in. It works and it improves response rates and it makes the emails feel more authentic and personalized. The issue is the time you're investing there if you have a list of 1,000 people and you have 10 emails and you want to make each email customized, well, that's 10,000 different things you need to find to merge in to make them custom. So there's some benefits to making the emails more personalized. There's some benefits to making them more focused on the pains and problems and doing as much as you can within the email itself to make it customized. This is one of the reasons why I've come down on having my clients be very focused on the audience they want to reach first, because we're able to sort of skirt our way around this issue. If we understand our audience, if we're saying we just want to reach food bloggers who are using Infusionsoft, we could make our emails feel pretty personalized without actually having it be a one-to-one personalization. We're able to talk about, you know, the challenges of growing a food blog. And once you hit a certain size, well, you have a big list. You want to make sure they're getting the right emails. Do you have an outreach sequence set up? Are you monetizing it correctly? You have a product set up, but are you pitching everybody on it? It could feel like it's written directly for them, even if it is a mass email, because you've niched down to a particular audience. If you're more scattered and are saying, hey, we're tackling two or three audiences at the same time, your emails become less crispy, they become more soggy, and they aren't as relevant to the person receiving it. And in those cases, I think adding in personalization helps. But I've had response rates on marketing outreach campaigns of, gosh, over 60% with just cookie cutter, same email template to everybody. But the benefit was I was really targeting one particular niche. All the emails were dialed into exactly the pains and problems that audience was facing. And so when I was emailing them, they were like, oh yeah, this is written specifically for me, even though it was an email I was sending to 100 or 1,000 different people.
I have a very prehistoric belief that even if I have a script and an idea how the emails should look like, mm-hmm. if I type things manually for this person, mm-hmm. even though generic phrases, he's going to fill it on the other line. It's not true, right?
It's not true. I mean, so much of, even when we look at like my consulting business, a lot of the emails I send to prospects or clients are pre-written, are templates. So if I send out a proposal to somebody, I have a pre-written template email I use to introduce them to the proposal. If I'm talking with a new prospect, I have a pre-written template I send to them. It's the same principle applied with cold outreach. You're just tuning the emails to make sure they're relevant to the person you're sending them to, and then sending them out and leveraging tools like BuiltWith or QuickMail to reach a larger audience than you could if you spent the time typing out each email one by one.
That's right. Because, for example, with email marketing, you are sending out the campaigns, but you are not pretending that it's sent sent from your iPhone. That's trick. It's really bad. But you're not pretending to be writing to them personally. You're right. Imagining them and writing like metaphorically, but we all know what kind of game we're in. However, with cold outreach, you kind of pretending that you know the person personally, and that's a little bit different. Or maybe we should just, you know, take that prejudice away and start making money.
I think you're right in that it is different, that with cold outreach, you are trying to make it feel like, hey, Joe, I'm emailing you directly. I saw you're using Infusionsoft and wanted to see if, you know, you're running into any problems with it. You do want the emails to feel a little more personal and a little more one-on-one, but I don't think that needs to be a barrier to hold somebody back. I think it makes you question a couple of the fundamental assumptions you use when writing emails, like, hey, I want to write a longer email, or I want it to be more narrative focused, or I want it to be purely educational and not have a call to action. When you're writing more sales focused emails, you want them to be short, you want them to have a clear call to action, you want them to have a clear next step, and you want them to immediately identify the value that you could provide to the person you're emailing. So slightly different tactical implementation, but I think it provides, as long as it's providing value to the person, it's going to be an email that's well received.
All right. Now with that, we're done with the emotional issues and the beliefs. What do you write in the actual email?
That's the $1 million question.
Right. I was waiting.
What I found works best is starting off with, and this is a template I absolutely love. I just send it to the recipient saying, hey, are you the best person to talk about X? If not, who do you recommend I get in touch with? Signed, Kai. And it's a short, simple email, but here, let me break down why I love this email as the first email in an outreach campaign, because it's offering the person a choice of yeses in how they respond. Either they're able to say, you know what, I am the person to talk to about this particular problem, or they're able to say, hey, I'm not the right person, but you should go talk to Jane, or you should talk to Max. They're the people who handle this. So instead of it just being a, hey, do you want this thing? You're able to start off by saying, are you the right person to talk to, or should I be talking to somebody else? It also flatters their ego. You're essentially making the assumption that they're powerful and mighty enough to have people working under them, and it should be referred down the chain. The third reason I love that email is because you're able to clearly identify the problem you're helping solve from the get-go. Are you the right person to talk to about increasing your sales? Are you the right person to talk to about issues on your website? Are you the right person to talk to about, you know, your Infusionsoft setup? You're able to clearly say, this is the thing I'm trying to help with. Are you the right person? If not, who do you recommend I get in touch with? Beyond that, I think the best cold outreach emails focus on educating the customer about, or educating the prospect about, the problem that they are experiencing. So flashing back to the example from last episode where we talked about the red car, and you take your car into the mechanic says, hey, your timing belt is about to give out. When that happens, it's going to cost you $5,000. Do you want to replace your timing belt today? We want to apply that same idea to our outreach emails, where we're teaching our customers about the problem they're experiencing and living with right now, even if they haven't identified it yet. So we want the emails to draw on market data to say, hey, you know what? If you haven't solved this problem yet, 50% of your visitors are going to be leaving your website. Or maybe if we're selling mobile optimization services, we could say, you know, more than 50% of Google searches now happen on an iPhone. If you aren't optimized for iPhones or tablets, more than half your visitors are going to show up and leave your website. How much revenue could that be costing you? So by highlighting the problem before we even talk about the thing we're trying to sell or the solution we're providing, a new responsive website that's beautiful and shiny and perfect, we're getting the person to buy into the belief that there's a problem at hand that we could help solve for them. So I really like having an outreach email sequence that first starts off asking, are you the right person to email about this? If not, who should I be emailing? Because it gets a quick reply and it lets us know, okay, don't email this person. Instead, go email this person over here. And from there, we move into educating them about the problem at hand with calls to actions in the email to say, hey, if you want, you know, our guide to the top 10 problems websites face when they become mobile optimized, just hit reply and I'll send it over. So offering incentives or white papers or research we've done that will educate the customer even further about the problem and position us as an authority and an expert who's willing to share knowledge without charging for it, you build up goodwill with that customer. And so they're more likely to say, oh yeah, I'm ready to hop on a call and talk with you about how you can help me improve my business.
Yeah, this is great. And it actually gives you a scenario. So the first email gives you the endorsement to talk.
Absolutely.
And with the second, once you get that permission from the person to talk to him, you just start, you know, rolling on with the problems.
Yep. Yep.
And from your experience, once you, you know, declare this colorful pain to them, mm-hmm. what's the response you usually get?
The response varies across the board. So people could come back saying, I'm really interested and I'd love to set up a call. People could come back saying, hey, you know what? This isn't for me and I'm not the right person. Or people could just not respond at all. So depending on those three responses, there's sort of three different scenarios we want to envision. If they respond back, hey, this is exactly what I need, let's have a conversation, you want to get them on the phone and have a conversation. If they respond back and give sort of a soft no, like, you know, we don't need this thing right now, probably maybe, you want to have an email set up to send them that addresses that objection. So they might say, yeah, we know mobile is hot right now, and we know we need to update our website. We just don't have a budget for it. Well, maybe you need an email prepared that counteracts that objection and says, sure, you might not have a budget for it, but would you have a budget for it if you were making twice as many sales? And if you optimize your website, you could be making more than twice as many sales. So is it a question of budget or a question of value? And so you're able to engage with them on the outcome you're trying to help them achieve. If they don't respond at all, then you just a week later, send email number three. And if they don't respond, send email number four. I've had cases where I've sent 5 to 10 emails to a prospect, be it a prospect for my consulting business or a prospect in an outreach campaign, and gotten no response up to email number 10. But once they get to that 10th email, they respond back and say, hey, you know what? I'm so sorry. I haven't had a chance to respond back yet. I was on vacation, or we were just doing a product launch, or I had 10,000 messages in my inbox and I finally got to this. Thank you for being so persistent and following up. I'd love to get on a call together. So
were these 10 emails after you got the endorsement to talk, or were they just totally cold?
Totally cold. Totally cold. So sending email number one, no response.
Is that not cold spam or...
It's not spam. So one interesting thing about cold outreach like this is, under canned spam regulations, at least in the US, you are allowed to send emails to people you do not know for a business purpose if you're pitching them on I can't remember the exact language at this moment, but if it's a business related email sent to a business address, you are able to email them. You just can't add them to a marketing campaign like MailChimp or Infusionsoft. So the distinction gets a little fuzzy. People say, well, what's the difference between dropping a list of 1,000 prospects into MailChimp or using something like QuickMail? The difference is, with QuickMail, you're sending from your personal address, you're sending from your personal domain, and it's much more tied to who you are, and it's much more of a business-focused email. So it's a bit of a, it's not a gray area, it's just a bit of a subtle distinction in what is spam and what isn't. So I think that as long as you're continuing to provide value, as long as you're helping educate the customer, as long as you're giving them the opportunity to respond back and say, hey, you know what, this isn't for me, and then the email stop, you're completely in the safe, you're using these tools correctly, and you're helping educate prospects and customers about why your service helps them solve the problems they're experiencing and why you're unique compared to your competitors.
See, we are so ethical here, and we worry so much about ethical things, but we should totally not, because we're leaving so much money on the table just because we are shy and, you know, might think that we're too persistent. But for an effective outreach campaign, you have to shut down those feelings and just, you know, bring value out to people, right?
100%. So many people I work with who do email marketing, either outreach email marketing or have a newsletter or some type of traditional email marketing, so often they express this fear to me of like, I don't want to email my customers too often. They'll stop buying from me, or they won't like me anymore, and they'll unsubscribe. I have one friend who I've worked with on email marketing before, and he just released a book. And I said, okay, great. So once somebody buys the book, we should email them the next day and be like, thank you so much for buying the book. I'm so happy. Let me know if you have any feedback. We should email them a week later and be like, do you have any questions? We should email them a week after that and be like, hey, I'd love to know your feedback. Would you fill out this testimonial form? And my friend's feedback was, that seems like too much email. Like, I want to email them once every 2 months. And I'm like, but they won't remember who you are. Like, the trick with email, be it outreach email or email marketing, is following up persistently, sending persistently, keeping yourself at top of mind, and not giving into the fear of, oh God, they're not going to like me, or oh God, they're going to hate this email. I think that's our ego talking more than anything else. And you're absolutely right in that when we give into that voice, we're leaving money on the table. Just like I know so many consultants who send a proposal, send a follow-up email, and then they'll just sit on their hands waiting for the client to get back to them. But you need to be persistent in following up and saying, hey, did you get that email I sent you? Hey, did you get that proposal? Hey, do you have any questions about that proposal? Only by being persistent will you nudge the client forward into taking action. Only by being persistent in sending your outreach emails will you nudge a prospect into saying, hey, you know what? This is a problem we're having. This is something that would be valuable to invest in solving. Let's work together.
Great. I could elaborate on that even more, but
please.
I mean, really, with any kind of activity online, you cannot be overly persistent, mm-hmm. because you might think that you're judging people by your example. For example, you do not like being marketed to. Like, I consider myself a very sensitive customer. Mm-hmm. I hate being sold to, like, hate with capital letters, but, I remember quite a few examples when I actually bought the products that were sold to me in all the ways unethical and massive and, you know, super persistent because I actually needed the product.
Mm-hmm.
So this is exactly the match you're looking for.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we as business owners can't be afraid to talk to our customers and can't be afraid to talk to potential prospects. And I think the benefit of cold outreach is you're going out there and you're saying, well, these are potential buyers. These are potential people who'd love what I have for sale. I'm going to talk to them until they switch from saying, who's this company that keeps emailing me? I've never heard of them before, to, oh my gosh, I keep hearing about this company. I need to do business with them. I need to work with them. And I think it's by being persistent that you flip that switch in the prospect's mind from, who are these people? I don't know them, to, I keep hearing from them. I owe them a reply now. I need to engage with them. I need to talk with them. And if you give up after sending one email and not hearing back, you've accepted no response as a no. I say you need to wait until you actually get that no from a prospect, until that person says, you know what? This is not for me. Thanks so much. I'm in no way a customer. That's when you definitively know that they're not somebody to work with and you can take them off the table. Until then, it's your moral responsibility to keep on educating them, keep on teaching them, keep on saying, hey, if you're experiencing this problem, this is what you need to know.
Right. By the way, being on the receiving side of cold emails, mm-hmm. I try to do my best and be as clear as possible when I'm not an actual prospect,
mm-hmm.
good one. So whenever I get an email that just doesn't apply to me, I would say like, thank you, I'm not interested. Good luck pursuing other customers,
exactly.
or something like that. So that they have no idea, like they can, you know, keep their scores. Speaking of scores, we need to discuss that. Keeping their, you know, open rates and stuff right, so mm-hmm. they don't qualify me. It's just a matter of qualification, not the personal preference.
Exactly. And exactly like you said, when a prospect says, you know what, thanks for emailing me, I'm not the right market for this, I don't need this. It's not that they're rejecting you. It's that they're saying, oh, this isn't a thing I need. And it's not mm-hmm. an insult to you or your app or your product. It's them just saying, you know what, I do not need to buy this thing today. Thank you so much. End of conversation.
Absolutely. So about measuring the results, how do we do that?
That's a tricky question. The metric that I'm focused on for my clients is responses that we're able to generate. So for a cold outreach campaign that's focused on sales, it's the number of replies and responses we get from the people we're emailing, and it's the total number of new people we're emailing every month. Open rate factors into it a bit, but people might have open rate tracking disabled on their computer if they don't automatically load images. Click-through rate is good, but somebody might have opened and read every single one of your emails, but just not clicked through. And so those metrics are nice to have, but they don't always give you an accurate reflection of what reality really is. So I think it's important to focus on, am I getting responses to my emails? And am I being consistent in adding new people to my campaigns? Beyond that, open rate, click-through rate, they're super valuable. But at the end of the day, it's, am I getting leads from this? Am I getting people who are saying, oh, I'd love to learn more about the service you have?
Right. So we measure our own effort of yep. engaging with people. And we measure the number of people who are actually reached by our cold initiative.
Yep.
So the number of contacts that we managed to establish as opposed to the number of sales, right?
Absolutely.
That's where we can measure conversion and start the funnel process.
Absolutely. And as far as outreach campaigns go, I always encourage my clients to that the number of sales we're able to get from this isn't the right metric to be tracking as far as the success of the outreach campaign, because there's so many other people involved in that sales process. The salesperson might have had a bad day, or any number of reasons might come up and the sale just doesn't happen. It's much better to say, hey, you know what? We're prospecting for people. Success is somebody responds back and says, yeah, I'd love to learn more. At that point, now it's the salesperson's job to actually close that deal. The prospecting was a success. The salesperson might try a new tactic and not convert the person. That doesn't mean they weren't a good prospect. It just means the sale didn't come through.
I'd love to hear some numbers for a typical campaign. Let's say a few use cases. Mm-hmm. Let's say one is a SaaS app that's looking to find their first 100 customers. So how many leads would they pursue per day, per month? What would be the rates? And then the other example would be, let's say, someone reaching out to popular bloggers trying to place a guest post or podcast episode.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
What would be the range?
For the first one, I'd say if you're a SaaS owner who's looking to get your first set of customers, your first 100 customers, you're probably looking at between 2 to 5% of people responding back in the affirmative saying, hey, yeah, I'd love to learn more about this and see if it's a good fit for my business. So that's just the conversion rate from person we're emailing to, hey, they're a lead now. The sales process might be something completely different, and you might have a 10% conversion rate on sales. So it gets a little hand wavy once we get past that point. But I think 2 to 5% is a decent range for response rate for these emails. If they're well dialed in, if you understand your audience, if you're persistently following up, if you have a multi-part sequence. On the flip side, when it's outreach for a marketing related purpose, hey, I'd love to come on your podcast. Hey, I'd love to contribute a guest article. Hey, do you want to come on my podcast? The response rates are a lot higher. I, in fact, measure those campaigns in terms of placements rather than just responses. A placement being, hey, we're actually having the article published, or hey, we've confirmed you're going to be on the podcast. In those cases, it's between 5 and 8 or 5 and 10%. And for a really well dialed in campaign, I've had results as high as a 25% placement rate, where 1 out of 4 people we contact say, yep, we'd love to do a review of your product, or yep, we'd love to have you contribute a guest article. The success in those campaigns really have come from understanding the people we're contacting, understanding the value we're able to offer, and really approaching the campaign from, hey, how do we make this a dialogue and a conversation instead of us as a brand saying, dear blogger, we'd love to write a guest post. Please let us know.
Yeah, sure. I've been making these campaigns for myself. I'm mm-hmm. not a cold outreach master. Mm-hmm. So I've been making like my marketing attempts always warm. So I'm trying to reach out to people who I personally know, who their responses can be, I don't know, dream like 80%, 90% or something. No, probably something around 60 or 70 when it's really warm. So if I added 20 more with a 25% conversion rate, that would really dramatically increase the exposure without too much effort, really.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But for SaaS, so the conversion is, let's say, 2 to 5%.
Mm-hmm.
So what kind of bulk number are we looking at sending like every day?
Every day, it depends. So it's not
applicable, I know, but just from your experience.
From my experience, I'd say if you are able to set it up so you're emailing between 100 and 300 prospects every month, so every month you're identifying and qualifying between 100 and 300 people to outreach to, you're in a very good position. And you have the outreach sequence already built. You could slowly scale up and say, okay, this month we reached out to 100 people. Next month, our goal is 150. Month after that, 200, and slowly build on the skills you're learning as you find opportunities to save time.
Is it sent or received?
that would be people we're sending emails out to.
Okay, so outcoming emails, like up to a few hundred is great.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Per month.
Yeah, per month. Where I'd mm-hmm. say prospects we want to start emailing a few hundred per month. And mm-hmm. if we say we're getting between a 2 and 4% response rate, that means each month we're getting 2 to 5 leads back for every 100 people we email, which could either be amazing or kind of crappy, depending on how your business is structured. If you're selling a $5 a month SaaS, getting 4 leads in and turning one of them into a customer isn't going to make you a ton of money. If you're selling a $50 a month or a $500 a month SaaS, well, getting 2 to 4 leads in and turning one of them into a customer can be a ton of money and make your business very, very successful if somebody sticks around for 2 or 3 years. So it depends on how your business is built from the ground up, whether an outreach campaign like this is a valuable investment. As with anything, there's so many different marketing channels that could bring customers to our businesses. It depends on, well, what makes financial sense for our business today.
And going back to why we should do cold outreach,
mm-hmm.
from my experience for SaaS companies, of course, they're hoping for inbound marketing to bring leads for them. But the process of customer acquisition for SaaS with recurring revenue, it's so much more, you know, exquisite, painful, and hard that cold outreach is much better qualified for transforming these people into actual leads because you get that chance to court them individually after they reply to your cold emails.
100%.
Whereas with content marketing, they're of course prime. They're nice to, I mean, they love your authority, but it doesn't mean that they have personal exposure. And that's where personal exposure is needed, is to close that SaaS deal.
Absolutely.
And I mean, SaaS is incredibly hard to grow, and that's where cold, I think, is even better than inbound, or both are needed, of course.
Absolutely. And I think we could see a lot of great case studies out there. I know for a SaaS that's looking to grow dramatically, if you have your, I mean, I just, I bang this metaphorical gong constantly, but if you know who your audience is, if you really niche down into, like, we're not just targeting people who use Infusionsoft, we're targeting fitness bloggers who use Infusionsoft, it's so much easier to make that outreach campaign work, build that personal relationship, and convince them, hey, you know what? This is valuable for you. This is why you need to invest in this. This is how it will help your business grow.
Absolutely. So we've got through the numbers. So I think we went through all the components of the of this. We need to have the audience, mm-hmm. need to have the pain. We then form the list. Then we form the, we write the emails, and we form the tree, the decision-making tree, the logic of your campaign, right? Mm-hmm. Then we measure the results. Is there anything else I'm missing out in a campaign, like analysis or...
That pretty much soup to nuts is what the structure looks like, starting with audience and ending with, hey, we've got a list of prospects that we're emailing and we've got these emails set up. I'd say the one other part is potentially A/B testing different emails. So once you have that first outreach sequence set up and you've sent emails for a couple months, then saying, okay, let's test a different variation for email number one and see if that improves the response rate or not. And just selectively optimizing as you move forward. But that's really like the more advanced next level strategy. If you just set up your outreach campaign where you're building a prospect list, have the outreach emails to send them, and consistently sending emails to these people, you're going to be leagues ahead of your competitors.
Yep. If you do just anything, you're going to be ahead of your competitors, most likely.
Absolutely. But
so...
I've been amazed over the last 6 months or so, the value that cold outreach has been able to provide for clients and even just colleagues, both from a marketing focus and from a sales focus. It's an incredibly valuable way to start building those relationships and moving those relationships forward. And like I said at the start of this episode, any form of outreach you're pursuing, it comes down to building that relationship. It's less of a transactional or a sales issue and more of, well, I want to build a relationship with this person so they understand the problems we're great at solving. I understand the problems their business is experiencing. And if those match up, it's a no-brainer decision to work together.
Plus, for example, what other options do you have there as a startup? You don't have too much funds to buy clicks and, you know, go for paid advertising. And the inbound marketing, it just grows slowly. You just can build your authority over, let's say, a year. But you want to have your first customers right now. What do you do?
Exactly.
With a zero budget, you just sit down and write those emails yourself.
Exactly. And so often I advise startups who are in that exact position of, you know, we're bootstrapped, we have some money, but we don't have a ton of money. What do? And I say the two most valuable things we could do are build your authority as a thought leader in the industry by doing cold outreach to marketing channels, podcasts, joint ventures, webinars, or guest articles, and then do direct outreach to potential customers to say, hey, you know what? If you're experiencing this pain, we could help you solve that pain. And those could play off of each other very, very well. If you're on an influential podcast talking about, you know, this is how we solve this common problem, you could suddenly reuse that marketing material in your sales email and say, hey, by the way, we were just interviewed on podcast XYZ about how we help businesses like yours get more revenue by switching from Infusionsoft to Drip. Click here to check it out. So you're able to leverage the authority from your marketing in your sales emails.
Sounds amazing.
It's a fun area to dive into.
Absolutely. So I think there is one more thing I would love to cover, but I would love to leave it to the next episode. Mm-hmm. Because in the next episode, we're going to be talking about podcasting and how to outreach correctly in order to land yourself an appearance in podcast. Mm-hmm. And we're going to cover that structure of an email that I always use, you know, those the opening part, introduction, yep. Et cetera, the call to action, the end. And we're going to break this through and explain how such emails work, like short, actionable, and effective.
Perfect. I'm excited.
Amazing. Amazing. Let's cross our fingers. Awesome. Thank you, Kai. I think it was spectacular. It was extremely long and extremely rich with content. I'm sure after listening to today's podcast, people can just sit down and, you know, nail those 5 leads right now.
Hey, I hope they can. For the people that enjoyed this, I think that cold outreach is going to be a valuable strategy they could add to their sales and marketing channels to really grow.
Absolutely. So thank you for sharing this insight. See you in the next episode.
Thanks for having me on. Talk to you soon.